right, Wanda? Jamie almost always asked for corroboration, though he never waited for my answer. They're all leathery, though, with 3, 4, or 5 sets of wings, depending on how old they are, right? So they kind of fly through the water. It's lighter than water here, less dense. They have 5, 7, or 9 legs, depending on which gender they are, right, Wanda? They have 3 different genders. They have really long hands with strong, tough fingers that can build all kinds of things. They make cities under the water out of hard plants that grow there, kind of like trees, but not really. They aren't as far along as we are, right, Wanda? Because they've never made a spaceship or, like, telephones for communication. Humans were more advanced. Trudy pulled out the tray of baked rolls, and I bent to shove the next tray of risen dough into the hot, smoking hole. It took a little jostling and balancing to get it in just right. As I sweated in front of the fire, I heard some kind of commotion outside the kitchen, echoing down the hall from somewhere else in the caves. It was hard, with all the random sound reverberations and strange acoustics, to judge distances here. "Hey!" Jamie shouted behind me, and I turned just in time to see the back of his head as he sprinted out the door. I straightened out of my crouch and took a step after him, my instinct to follow.
"Wait," Ian said. "He'll be back. Tell us more about the dolphins."
Ian was sitting on the counter beside the oven, a hot seat that I wouldn't have chosen, which made him close enough to reach out and touch my wrist. My arm flinched away from the unexpected contact, but I stayed where I was. "What's going on out there?" I asked. I could still hear some kind of jabbering. I thought I could hear Jamie's excited voice in the mix. Ian shrugged.
"Who knows? Maybe Jeb..."
He shrugged again, as if he wasn't interested enough to bother with figuring it out. Nonchalant, but there was a tension in his eyes I didn't understand. I was sure I would find out soon enough, so I shrugged, too, and started explaining the incredibly complex familial relationships of the dolphins while I helped Trudy stack the warm bread in plastic containers. 6 of the 9 grandparents, so to speak, traditionally stay with the larvae through their first stage of development, while the 3 parents work with their 6 grandparents on a new wing of the family dwelling for the young to inhabit when they are mobile, I was explaining, my eyes on the rolls in my hands rather than my audience, as usual, when I heard the gasp from the back of the room. I continued with my next sentence automatically as I scanned the crowd to see who I'd upset. The remaining 3 grandparents are customarily involved. No one was upset with me. Every head was turned in the same direction I was looking. My eyes skipped across the back of their heads to the dark exit. The first thing I saw was Jamie's slight figure clinging to someone's arm, someone so dirty, head to toe, that he almost blended right in with the cave wall. Someone too tall to be Jeb. And anyway, there was Jeb just behind Jamie's shoulder. Even from this distance, I could see that Jeb's eyes were narrowed and his nose wrinkled, as if he were anxious, a rare emotion for Jeb. Just as I could see that Jamie's face was bright with sheer joy.
"Here we go," Ian muttered beside me, his voice barely audible above the crackle of the flames.
The dirty man Jamie was still clinging to took a step forward. One of his hands rose slowly like an involuntary reflex and curled into a fist. From the dirty figure came Jared's voice, flat, perfectly devoid of any inflection.
"What is the meaning of this, Jeb?"
My throat closed. I tried to swallow and found the way blocked. I tried to breathe and was not successful. My heart drummed unevenly.
"Jared!"
Melanie's exultant voice was loud, a silent shriek of elation. She burst into radiant life inside my head.
"Jared is home!"
"Wanda is teaching us all about the universe," Jamie babbled eagerly, somehow not catching on to Jared's fury. He was too excited to pay attention, maybe.
"Wanda?"
Jared repeated, in a low voice that was almost a snarl. There were more dirty figures in the hall behind him. I only noticed them when they echoed his snarl with an outraged muttering. A blonde head rose from the frozen audience. Paige lurched to her feet.
"Andy!"
she cried, and stumbled through the figures seated around her. One of the dirty men stepped around Jared and caught her as she nearly fell over Wes.
"Oh, Andy!"
she sobbed, the tone of her voice reminding me of Melanie's. Paige's outburst changed the atmosphere momentarily. The silent crowd began to murmur, most of them rising to their feet. The sound was one of welcome now, as the majority went to greet the returned travelers. I tried to read the strange expressions on their faces as they forced grins onto their lips and peeked furtively back at me. I realized, after a long, slow second, time seemed to be congealing around me, freezing me into place, that the expression I wondered at was guilt.
"It's going to be okay, Wanda," Ian murmured under his breath.
I glanced at him wildly, searching for that same guilt on his face. I didn't find it, only a defensive tightening around his vivid eyes as he stared at the newcomers.
"What the hell, people?" a new voice boomed.
Kyle, easily identifiable by his size despite the grime, was shoving his way around Jared and heading toward me.
"You're letting it tell you its lies? Have you all gone crazy? Or did it lead the Seekers here? Are you all parasites now?"
Many heads fell forward, ashamed. Only a few kept their chins stiffly in the air, their shoulders squared. Lily, Trudy, Heath, Wes, and frail Walter, of all people.
"Easy, Kyle,"
Walter said in his feeble voice. Kyle ignored him. He walked with deliberate steps toward me, his eyes, the same vibrant cobalt as his brother's, glowing with rage. I couldn't keep my eyes on him, though. They kept returning to Jared's dark shape, trying to read his camouflaged face. Melanie's love flowed through me like a lake bursting through a dam, distracting me even more from the enraged barbarian closing the distance quickly. Ian slid into my view, moving to place himself in front of me. I strained my neck to the side to keep my view of Jared clear.
"Things changed while you were gone, brother."
Kyle halted, face slack with disbelief.
"Did the Seekers come then, Ian? She's not a danger to us."
Kyle ground his teeth together, and from the corner of my eye I saw him reach for something in his pocket. This captured my attention at last. I cringed, expecting a weapon. The words stumbled off my tongue in a choked whisper. "Don't get in his way, Ian." Ian didn't respond to my plea. I was surprised at the amount of anxiety this caused me, at how much I didn't want him hurt. It wasn't the instinctive protection, the bone-deep need to protect, that I felt for Jamie or even Jared. I just knew that Ian should not be harmed trying to protect me. Kyle's hand came back up and a light shone out of it. He pointed it at Ian's face, held it there for a moment. Ian didn't flinch from the light.
"So what then?"
Kyle demanded, putting the flashlight back in his pocket.
"You're not a parasite. How did it get to you? Calm down and we'll tell you all about it." "No."
The contradiction did not come from Kyle, but from behind him. I watched Jared walk slowly toward us through the silent spectators. As he got closer, Jamie, still clinging to his hand with a bewildered expression, I could read his face better under the mask of dirt. Even Melanie, all but delirious with happiness at his safe return, could not misunderstand the expression of loathing there. Jeb had wasted his efforts on the wrong people. It didn't matter that Trudy or Lily was speaking to me, that Ian would put himself between his brother and me, that Sharon and Maggie made no hostile move toward me. The only one who had to be convinced had now, finally, decided.
"I don't think anyone needs to calm down," Jared said through his teeth. "Jeb," he continued, not looking to see if the old man had followed him forward. "Give me the gun.
The silence that followed his words was so tense I could feel the pressure inside my ears. From the instant I could clearly see his face, I'd known it was over. I knew what I had to do now. Melanie was in agreement. As quietly as I could, I took a step to the side and slightly back, so that I would be clear of Ian. Then I closed my eyes.
"Don't happen to have it on me," Jeb drawled.
I peeked through narrowed eyes as Jared whirled to assess the truth of Jeb's claim. Jared's breath whistled angrily through his nostrils.
"Fine," he muttered.
He took another step toward me.
"It will be slower this way, though. It would be more humane if you were to find that gun fast." "Please, Jared, let's talk," Ian said, planting his feet firmly as he spoke, already knowing the answer. "I think there's been too much talk," Jared growled. "Jeb left this up to me, and I've made my decision."
Jeb cleared his throat noisily. Jared spun halfway around to look at him again.
"What?" he demanded. "You made the rule, Jeb." "Well, now, that's true."
Jared turned back toward me.
"Ian, get out of my way." "Well, well, hold on a sec," Jeb went on. "If you recall, the rule was that whoever the body belonged to got to make the decision."
A vein in Jared's forehead pulsed visibly.
"And?" "Seems to me like there's someone here with a claim just as strong as yours. Maybe stronger."
Jared stared straight ahead, processing this. After a slow moment, understanding furrowed his brow. He looked down at the boy still hanging on his arm. All the joy had drained from Jamie's face, leaving it pale and horror-struck.
"You can't, Jared," he choked.
"You wouldn't. Want is good. She's my friend. And Mel. What about Mel? You can't kill Mel. Please. You have to—"
He broke off, his expression agonized. I closed my eyes again, trying to block the picture of the suffering boy from my mind. It was already almost impossible not to go to him. I locked my muscles in place, promising myself that it wouldn't help him if I moved now.
"So," Jeb said, his tone far too conversational for the moment, "you can see that Jamie's not in agreement. I figure he's got as much to say as you do."
There was no answer for so long that I had to open my eyes again. Jared was staring at Jamie's anguished, fearful face with his own kind of horror.
"How could you let this happen, Jeb?"
he whispered.
"There is a need for some talk,"
Jeb answered.
"Why don't you take a breather first, though? Maybe you'll feel more up to conversation after a bath."
Jared glared balefully at the old man, his eyes full of the shock and pain of the betrayed. I had only human comparisons for such a look. Caesar and Brutus. Jesus and Judas. The unbearable tension lasted through another long minute, and then Jared shook Jamie's fingers off his arm.
"Kyle,"
Jared barked, turning and stalking out of the room. Kyle gave his brother a parting grimace and followed. The other dirty members of the expedition went after them silently, Paige tucked securely under Andy's arm. Most of the other humans, all those who had hung their heads in shame for admitting me into their society, shuffled out behind them. Only Jamie, Jeb, and Ian beside me, and Trudy, Jeffrey, Heath, Lily, Wes, and Walter stayed. No one spoke until the echoes of their footsteps faded away into silence.
"Phew,"
Ian breathed.
"That was close. Nice thinking, Jeb." "Inspiration in desperation. But we're not out of the woods yet,"
Jeb answered.
"Don't I know it? You didn't leave the gun anywhere obvious, did you?"
"Nope.
I figured this might be coming on soon. That's something, at least."
Jamie was trembling, alone, in the space left by the exodus. Surrounded by those I had to count as friends, I felt able to walk to his side. He threw his arms around my waist, and I patted his back with shaky hands.
"It's okay," I lied in a whisper. "It's okay."
I knew even a fool would hear the false note in my voice, and Jamie was not a fool.
"He won't hurt you,"
Jamie said thickly, struggling against the tears I could see in his eyes.
"I won't let him."
"Shh," I murmured. I was appalled. I could feel that my face was fixed in lines of horror. Jared was right. How could Jeb have let this happen? If they'd killed me the first day here, before Jamie had ever seen me, or that first week, while Jared kept me isolated from everyone before Jamie and I had become friends, or if I had just kept my mouth shut about Melanie, it was too late for all that. My arms tightened around the child. Melanie was just as aghast.
"My poor baby."
"I told you it was a bad idea to tell him everything," I reminded her.
"What will it do to him now when we die? It's going to be terrible. He'll be traumatized and scarred and devastated."
Melanie interrupted me.
"Enough. I know. But what can we do? Not die, I suppose."
Melanie and I thought about the likelihood of our survival and felt despair. Ian thumped Jamie on the back. I could feel the motion reverberate through both our bodies.
"Don't agonize over it, kid," he said. "You're not in this alone."
"They're just shocked, that's all." I recognized Trudy's alto voice behind me. "Once we get a chance to explain, they'll see reason."
"See reason? Kyle?" someone hissed almost unintelligibly. "We knew this was coming," Jeb muttered. "Just got to weather it. Storms pass."
"Maybe you ought to find that gun," Lily suggested calmly. "Tonight might be a long one. Wanda can stay with Heidi and me."
"I think it might be better to keep her somewhere else," Ian disagreed. "Maybe in the southern tunnels. I'll keep an eye on her. Jeb, wanna lend me a hand?"
"They wouldn't look for her with me."
Walter's offer was just a whisper. Wes spoke over the last of Walter's words.
"I'll tag along with you, Ian. There are six of them."
"No,"
I finally managed to choke out.
"No, that's not right. You shouldn't fight with each other. You all belong here. You belong together, not fighting, not because of me."
I pulled Jamie's arms from around my waist, holding his wrists when he tried to stop me.
"I just need a minute to myself," I told him, ignoring all the stares I could feel on my face. "I need to be alone."
I turned my head to find Jeb.
"And you should have a chance to discuss this without me listening. It's not fair, having to discuss strategy in front of the enemy."
"Now, don't be like that," Jeb said.
"Let me have some time to think, Jeb."
I stepped away from Jamie, dropping his hands. A hand fell on my shoulder and I cringed. It was just Ian.
"It's not a good idea for you to be wandering around by yourself."
I leaned toward him and tried to pitch my voice so low that Jamie wouldn't hear me clearly.
"Why prolong the inevitable? Will it get easier or harder for him?"
I thought I knew the answer to my last question. I ducked under Ian's hand and broke into a run, sprinting for the exit.
"Wanda!"
Jamie called after me. Someone quickly shushed him. There were no footsteps behind me. They must have seen the wisdom of letting me go. The hall was dark and deserted. If I was lucky, I'd be able to cut around the edge of the big garden plaza in the dark with no one the wiser. In all my time here, the one thing I'd never found was the way out. It seemed as if I'd been down every tunnel time and again, and I'd never seen an opening I hadn't eventually explored in search of one thing or another. I thought about it now as I crept through the deepest, shadowed corners of the big cave. Where could the exit be? And I thought about this. If I could figure that puzzle out, would I be able to leave? I couldn't think of anything worth leaving for. Certainly not the desert waiting outside. But also not the seeker, not the healer, not my comforter, not my life before, which had left such a shallow impression on me. Everything that really mattered was with me here. Jamie. Though he would kill me, Jared. I couldn't imagine walking away from either of them. And Jeb, Ian. I had friends now. Doc, Trudy, Lily, Wes, Walter, Heath. Strange humans who could overlook what I was and see something they didn't have to kill. Maybe it was just curiosity. But regardless of that, they were willing to side with me against the rest of their tight-knit family of survivors. I shook my head in wonder as I traced the rough rock with my hands. I could hear others in the cavern, on the far side from me. I didn't pause. They could not see me here, and I'd just found the crevice I was looking for. After all, there was really only one place for me to go. Even if I could somehow have guessed the way to escape, I would still have gone this way. I crept into the blackest darkness imaginable and hurried along my way. Chapter 27. Undecided. I felt my way back to my prison hole. It had been weeks and weeks since I'd been down this particular corridor. I hadn't been back since the morning after Jared had left and Jeb had set me free. It seemed to me that while I lived and Jared was in the caves, this must be where I belonged. There was no dim light to greet me now. I was fairly sure I was in the last leg. The turns and twists were still vaguely familiar. I let my left hand drag against the wall as low as I could reach, feeling for the opening as I crept forward. I wasn't decided on crawling back inside the cramped hole, but at least it would give me a reference point, letting me know that I was where I meant to be. As it happened, I didn't have the option of inhabiting my cell again. In the same moment that my fingers brushed the rough edge at the top of the hole, my foot hit an obstacle and I stumbled, falling to my knees. I threw my hands out to catch myself, and they landed with a crunch and a crackle, breaking through something that wasn't rock and didn't belong here. The sound startled me. The unexpected object frightened me. Perhaps I'd made a wrong turn and wasn't anywhere near my hole. Perhaps I was in someone's living space. I ran through the memory of my recent journey in my head, wondering how I could have gotten so turned about. Meanwhile, I listened for some reaction to my crashing fall, holding absolutely still in the darkness. There was nothing. No reaction. No sound. It was only dark and stuffy and humid, as it always was, and so silent that I knew I must be alone. Carefully, trying to make as little noise as possible, I took stock of my surroundings. My hands were stuck in something. I pulled them free, tracing the contours of what felt like a cardboard box. A cardboard box with a sheet of thin, crackly plastic on top that my hands had fallen through. I felt around inside the box and found a layer of more crackly plastic, small rectangles that made a lot of noise when I handled them. I retreated quickly, afraid of drawing attention to myself. I remembered that I'd thought I'd found the top of the hole. I searched to my left and found more stacks of cardboard squares on that side. I tried to find the top of the stack and had to stand in order to do so. It was as high as my head. I searched until I found the wall and then the hole exactly where I'd thought it was. I tried to climb in to ascertain if it was really the same place. 1 second on that bowed floor and I would know it for certain. But I could not get any farther than the opening. It, too, was crammed full of boxes. Stymied, I explored with my hands, moving back out into the hall. I found I could go no deeper down the passageway. It was entirely filled with the mysterious cardboard squares. As I hunted along the floor, trying to understand, I found something different from the crowd of boxes. It was rough fabric, like burlap, a sack full of something heavy that shifted with a quiet hissing sound when I nudged it. I kneaded the sack with my hands, less alarmed by the low hiss than by the plastic crackle. It seemed unlikely that this sound would alert anyone to my presence. Suddenly it all came clear. It was the smell that did it. As I played with the sand-like material inside the bag, I got an unexpected whiff of a familiar scent. It took me back to my bare kitchen in San Diego, to the low cupboard on the left side of the sink. In my head I could see so clearly the bag of uncooked rice, the plastic measuring cup I used to dole it out, the rows of canned food behind it. Once I realized that I was touching a bag of rice, I understood. I was in the right place after all. Hadn't Jeb said they used this place for storage? And hadn't Jared just returned from a long raid? Now everything the raiders had stolen in the weeks they'd been gone was dumped in this out-of-the-way place until it could be used. Many thoughts ran through my head at once. First, I realized that I was surrounded by food. Not just rough bread and weak onion soup, but food. Somewhere in this stack there could be peanut butter, chocolate chip cookies, potato chips, Cheetos. Even as I imagined finding these things, tasting them again, being full for the first time since I'd left civilization, I felt guilty for thinking of it. Jared hadn't risked his life and spent weeks hiding and stealing to feed me. This food was for others. I also worried that perhaps this wasn't the entire haul. What if they had more boxes to stow? Would Jared and Kyle be the ones to bring them? It didn't take any imagination at all to picture the scene that would result if they found me here. But wasn't that why I was here? Wasn't that exactly what I'd needed to be alone to think about? I slouched against the wall. The rice bag made a decent pillow. I closed my eyes, unnecessary in the inky darkness, and settled in for a consultation. Okay, Mel. What now? I was glad to find that she was still awake and alert. Opposition brought out her strength. It was only when things were going well that she drifted away. Priorities, she decided. What's most important to us? Staying alive? Or Jamie? She knew the answer. Jamie, I affirmed, sighing out loud. The sound of my breath whispered back from the black walls. Agreed. We could probably last a while if we let Jeb and Ian protect us. Will that help him?
Maybe. Would he be more hurt if we just gave up?
Or if we let this drag on, only to have it end badly, which seems inevitable? She didn't like that. I could feel her scrambling around, searching for alternatives.
Try to escape? I suggested.
Unlikely, she decided. Besides, what would we do out there? What would we tell them? We imagined it together. How would I explain my months of absence? I could lie, make up some alternate story, or say I didn't remember. But I thought of the Seeker's skeptical face, her bulging eyes bright with suspicion, and knew my inept attempts at subterfuge would fail.
They'd think I took over, Melanie agreed. Then they'd take you out and put her in.
I squirmed, as if a new position on the rock floor would take me further away from the idea, and shuddered. Then I followed the thought to its conclusion. She'd tell them about this place, and the Seekers would come. The horror washed through us.
Right, I continued. So escape is out.
Right, she whispered, emotion making her thought unstable.
So the decision is, quick or slow, which hurts him less?
It seemed that as long as I focused on practicalities, I could keep at least my side of the discussion numbly businesslike. Melanie tried to mimic my effort.
I'm not sure.
On the one hand, logically, the longer the three of us are together, the harder our separation would be for him. Then again, if we didn't fight, if we just gave up, he wouldn't like that. He'd feel betrayed by us. I looked at both sides she'd presented, trying to be rational about it. So, quick? But we have to do our best not to die?
Go down fighting, she affirmed grimly.
Fighting. Fabulous. I tried to imagine that. Meeting violence with violence. Raising my hand to strike someone. I could form the words, but not the mental picture.
You can do it, she encouraged. I'll help you.
Thanks, but no thanks. There has to be some other way.
I don't get you, Wanda. You've given up on your species entirely. You're ready to die for my brother. You're in love with the man I love who is going to kill us, and yet you won't let go of customs that are entirely impractical here.
I am who I am, Mel. I can't change that, though everything else may change. You hold on to yourself. Allow me to do the same.
But if we're going to...
She would have continued to argue with me, but we were interrupted. A scuffing sound, shoe against rock, echoed from somewhere back down the corridor. I froze. Every function of my body arrested but my heart, and even that faltered jaggedly, and listened. I didn't have long to hope that I just imagined the sound. Within seconds I could hear more quiet footsteps coming this way. Melanie kept her cool, whereas I was lost to panic.
Get on your feet, she ordered.
Why?
You won't fight, but you can run. You have to try something. For Jamie.
I started breathing again, keeping it quiet and shallow. Slowly I rolled forward till I was on the balls of my feet. Adrenaline coursed through my muscles, making them tingle and flex. I would be faster than most who would try to catch me. But where would I run to?
Wanda, someone whispered quietly. Wanda, are you here? It's me.
His voice broke, and I knew him.
Jamie, I rasped. What are you doing? I told you I needed to be alone.
Relief was plain in his voice, which he now raised from the whisper.
Everybody is looking for you. Well, you know, Trudy and Lily and Wes, that everybody. Only we're not supposed to let anyone know that's what we're doing. No one is supposed to guess that you're missing. Jeb's got his gun again. Ian's with Doc. When Doc's free, he'll talk to Jared and Kyle. Everybody listens to Doc. So you don't have to hide. Everybody's busy and you're probably tired.
As Jamie explained, he continued forward until his fingers found my arm, and then my hand.
I'm not really hiding, Jamie. I told you I had to think.
You could think with Jeb there, right?
Where do you want me to go? Back to Jared's room? This is where I'm supposed to be.
Not anymore.
The familiar stubborn edge entered his voice.
Why is everyone so busy? I asked to distract him. What's Doc doing?
My attempt was unsuccessful. He didn't answer. After a minute of silence, I touched his cheek.
Look, you should be with Jeb. Tell the others to stop looking for me. I'll just hang out here for a while.
You can't sleep here.
I have before.
I felt his head shake in my hand.
I'll go get mats and pillows, at least.
I don't need more than one.
I'm not staying with Jared while he's being such a jerk.
I groaned internally.
Then you stay with Jeb and his snores. You belong with them, not with me.
I belong wherever I want to be.
The threat of Kyle finding me here was heavy on my mind. But that argument would only make Jamie feel responsible for protecting me.
Fine, but you have to get Jeb's permission.
Later. I'm not going to bug Jeb tonight.
What is Jeb doing?
Jamie didn't answer. It was only at that point I realized he had deliberately not answered my question the first time. There was something he didn't want to tell me. Maybe the others were busy trying to find me, too. Maybe Jared's homecoming had returned them to their original opinion about me. It had seemed that way in the kitchen, when they'd hung their heads and eyed me with furtive guilt.
What's going on, Jamie? I pressed.
I'm not supposed to tell you, he muttered, and I'm not going to.
His arms wrapped tightly around my waist, and his face pressed against my shoulder.
Everything is going to be all right, he promised me, his voice thick.
I patted his back and ran my fingers through his tangled mane.
Okay,
I said, agreeing to accept his silence. After all, I had my secrets too, didn't I?
Don't be upset, Jamie. Whatever it is, it will all work out for the best. You're going to be fine.
As I said the words, I willed them to be true.
I don't know what to hope for, he whispered.
As I stared into the dark at nothing in particular, trying to understand what he wouldn't say, a faint glow caught my eye at the far end of the hallway, dim but conspicuous in the black cave.
Shh, I breathed. Someone is coming. Quick, hide behind the boxes.
Jamie's head snapped up toward the yellow light that was getting brighter by the second. I listened for the accompanying footsteps but heard nothing.
I'm not going to hide, he breathed. Get behind me, Wanda.
No.
Jamie, Jared shouted. I know you're back here.
My legs felt hollow, numb. Did it have to be Jared? It would be so much easier for Jamie if Kyle were the one to kill me.
Go away, Jamie shouted back.
The yellow light sped up and turned into a circle on the far wall. Jared stalked around the corner, the flashlight in his hand sweeping back and forth across the rock floor. He was clean again, wearing a faded red shirt I recognized. It had hung in the room where I'd lived for weeks, and so was a familiar sight. His face was also familiar. It wore exactly the same expression it had since the first moment I'd shown up here. The beam of the flashlight hit my face and blinded me. I knew the light reflected brilliantly off the silver behind my eyes because I felt Jamie jump. Just a little start, and then he set himself more firmly than before.
Get away from it! Jared roared. Shut up!
Jamie yelled back.
You don't know her! Leave her alone!
He clung to me while I tried to unlock his hands. Jared came on like a charging bull. He grabbed the back of Jamie's shirt with one hand and yanked him away from me. He held on to his handful of fabric, shaking the boy while he yelled.
You're being an idiot. Can't you see how it's using you?
Instinctively, I shoved myself into the tight space between them. As I'd intended, my advance made him drop Jamie. I didn't want or need what else happened. The way his familiar smell assaulted my senses, the way the contours of his chest felt under my hands. Leave Jamie alone, I said, wishing for once that I could be more like Melanie wanted me to be, that my hands could be hard now, that my voice could be strong. He snatched my wrists in one hand and used this leverage to hurl me away from him, into the wall. The impact caught me by surprise, knocked the breath out of me. I rebounded off the stone wall to the floor, landing in the boxes again, making another crinkly crash as I shredded through more cellophane. The pulse thudded in my head as I lay awkwardly bent over the boxes, and for a moment I saw strange lights pass in front of my eyes.
Coward! Jamie screamed at Jared. She wouldn't hurt you to save her own life! Why can't you leave her alone?
I heard the boxes shifting and felt Jamie's hands on my arm.
Wanda, are you okay, Wanda?
Fine,
I huffed, ignoring the throbbing in my head. I could see his anxious face hovering over me in the glow of the flashlight, which Jared must have dropped.
You should go now, Jamie, I whispered.
Run!
Jamie shook his head fiercely.
Stay away from it!
Jared bellowed. I watched as Jared grabbed Jamie's shoulders and yanked the boy up from his crouch. The boxes this displaced fell on me like a small avalanche. I rolled away, covering my head with my arms. A heavy one caught me right between the shoulder blades, and I cried out in pain.
Stop hurting her! Jamie howled.
There was a sharp crack, and someone gasped. I struggled to pull myself out from under the heavy carton, rising up on my elbows dizzily. Jared had one hand over his nose, and something dark was oozing down over his lips. His eyes were wide with surprise. Jamie stood in front of him with both hands clenched into fists, a furious scowl on his face. Jamie's scowl melted slowly while Jared stared at him in shock. Hurt took its place. Hurt, and a betrayal so deep that it rivaled Jared's expression in the kitchen.
"You aren't the man I thought you were," Jamie whispered.
He looked at Jared as though Jared were very far away, as if there were a wall between them, and Jamie was utterly isolated on his side. Jamie's eyes started to swim, and he turned his head, ashamed of showing weakness in front of Jared. He walked away with quick, jerky movements.
"We tried," Melanie thought sadly. Her heart ached after the child, even as she longed for me to return my eyes to the man.
I gave her what she wanted. Jared wasn't looking at me. He was staring at the blackness into which Jamie had disappeared, his hand still covering his nose.
"Aw, damn it!" he suddenly shouted. "Jamie! Get back here!"
There was no answer. Jared threw one bleak glance in my direction. I cringed away, though his fury seemed to have faded, then scooped up the flashlight and stomped after Jamie, kicking a box out of his way.
"I'm sorry, okay? Don't cry, kid."
He called out more angry apologies as he turned the corner and left me lying in the darkness. For a long moment, it was all I could do to breathe. I concentrated on the air flowing in, then out, then in. After I felt I had that part mastered, I worked on getting up off the floor. It took a few seconds to remember how to move my legs, and even then they were shaky and threatened to collapse under me, so I sat against the wall again, sliding over till I found my rice-filled pillow. I slumped there and took stock of my condition. Nothing was broken, except maybe Jared's nose. I shook my head slowly. Jamie and Jared should not be fighting. I was causing them so much turmoil and unhappiness. I sighed and went back to my assessment. There was a vast sore spot in the center of my back, and the side of my face felt raw and moist where it had hit the wall. It stung when I touched it and left warm fluid on my fingers. That was the worst of it, though. The other bruises and scrapes were mild. As I realized that, I was unexpectedly overwhelmed by relief. I was alive. Jared had had his chance to kill me, and he had not used it. He'd gone after Jamie instead to make things right between them. So whatever damage I was doing to their relationship, it was probably not irreparable. It had been a long day. The day had already been long, even before Jared and the others had shown up, and that seemed like eons ago. I closed my eyes where I was and fell asleep on the rice. Chapter 28 Unenlightened. It was disorienting to wake in the absolute dark. In the past months, I'd gotten used to having the sun tell me it was morning. At first, I thought it must still be night, but then, feeling the sting of my face and the ache of my back, I remembered where I was. Beside me, I could hear the sound of quiet, even breathing. It did not frighten me, because it was the most familiar of sounds here. I was not surprised that Jamie had crept back and slept beside me last night. Maybe it was the change in my breathing that woke him. Maybe it was just that our schedules had become synchronized. But seconds after I was conscious, he gave a little gasp.
"Wanda," he whispered, "I'm right here."
He sighed in relief.
"It's really dark here," he said.
"Yes."
"You think it's breakfast time yet?"
"I don't know.
I'm hungry."
"Let's go see."
I didn't answer him. He interpreted my silence correctly, as the balk it was.
"You don't have to hide out here, Wanda," he said earnestly,
after waiting a moment for me to speak.
"I talked to Jared last night. He's going to stop picking on you. He promised."
I almost smiled. Picking on me.
Will you come with me?
Jamie pressed. His hand found mine.
Is that what you really want me to do?
I asked in a low voice.
Yes. Everything will be the same as it was before.
Mel, is this best?
I don't know.
She was torn. She knew she couldn't be objective. She wanted to see Jared.
That's crazy, you know.
Not as crazy as the fact that you want to see him, too.
Fine, Jamie,
I agreed.
But don't get upset when it's not the same as before, okay? If things get ugly, well, just don't be surprised. It'll be okay. You'll see.
I let him lead the way out of the dark, towing me by the hand he still held. I braced myself as we entered the big garden cavern. I couldn't be sure of anyone's reaction to me today. Who knew what had been said as I slept? But the garden was empty, though the sun was bright in the morning sky. It reflected off the hundreds of mirrors, momentarily blinding me. Jamie was not interested in the vacant cave. His eyes were on my face, and he sucked in a sharp breath through his teeth as the light touched my cheek.
Oh, he gasped. Are you okay? Does that hurt bad?
I touched my face lightly. The skin felt rough, grit crusted in the blood. It throbbed where my fingers brushed.
It's fine, I whispered.
The empty cavern made me wary. I didn't want to speak too loudly.
Where is everybody?
Jamie shrugged, his eyes still tight as they surveyed my face.
Busy, I guess.
He didn't lower his voice. This reminded me of last night, of the secret he wouldn't tell me. My eyebrows pulled together.
What do you think he's not telling us?
You know what I know, Wanda.
You're human. Aren't you supposed to have intuition or something?
Intuition? My intuition tells me that we don't know this place as well as we thought we did, Melanie said. We pondered the ominous sound of that. It was almost a relief to hear the normal noises of mealtime coming from the kitchen corridor. I didn't particularly want to see anyone, besides the sick yearning to see Jared, of course. But the unpopulated tunnels, combined with the knowledge that something was being kept from me, made me edgy. The kitchen was not even half full. An oddity for this time of the morning. But I barely noticed that, because the smell coming from the banked stone oven overruled every other thought.
Ooh, Jamie moaned. Eggs!
Jamie pulled me faster now, and I had no reluctance to keep pace with him. We hurried, stomachs growling, to the counter by the oven, where Lucina, the mother, stood with a plastic ladle in her hand. Breakfast was usually serve yourself, but then breakfast was also usually tough bread rolls. She looked only at the boy as she spoke.
They tasted better an hour ago.
They'll taste just fine now, Jamie countered enthusiastically. Has everyone eaten?
Pretty much. I think they took a tray down to dock and the rest...
Lucina trailed off, and her eyes flickered to me for the first time. Jamie's eyes did the same. I didn't understand the expression that crossed Lucina's face. It disappeared too quickly, replaced by something else, as she appraised the new marks on my face.
How much is left? Jamie asked.
His eagerness sounded a trifle forced now. Lucina turned and bent, tugging a metal pan off the hot stones in the bottom of the oven with the bowl of the ladle.
How much do you want, Jamie?
There's plenty, she told him without turning.
Pretend I'm Kyle, he said with a laugh.
A Kyle-sized portion it is, Lucina said.
But when she smiled, her eyes were unhappy. She filled one of the soup bowls to overflowing with slightly rubbery scrambled eggs, stood up, and handed it to Jamie. She eyed me again, and I understood what this look was for.
Let's sit over there, Jamie,
I said, nudging him away from the counter. He stared in amazement.
Don't you want any?
No, I'm...
I was about to say fine again when my stomach gurgled disobediently.
Wanda?
He looked at me, then back at Lucina, who had her arms folded across her chest.
I'll just have bread, I muttered, trying to shove him away.
No! Lucina, what's the problem?
He looked at her expectantly. She didn't move.
If you're done here, I'll take over, he suggested, his eyes narrowing and his mouth setting in a stubborn line.
Lucina shrugged and set the ladle on the stone counter. She walked away slowly, not looking at me again.
Jamie,
I muttered urgently under my breath.
This food isn't meant for me.
Jared and the others weren't risking their lives so that I could have eggs for breakfast.
Bread is fine.
Don't be stupid, Wanda, Jamie said. You live here now, just like the rest of us. Nobody minds it when you wash their clothes or bake their bread. Besides, these eggs aren't going to last much longer. If you don't eat them, they'll get thrown out.
I felt all the eyes in the room boring into my back.
That might be preferable to some, I said even more quietly.
No one but Jamie could possibly hear.
Forget that, Jamie growled.
He hopped over the counter and filled another bowl with eggs, which he then shoved at me.
You're going to eat every bite, he told me resolutely.
I looked at the bowl. My mouth watered. I pushed the eggs a few inches away from me and then folded my arms. Jamie frowned.
Fine, he said, and shoved his own bowl across the counter. You don't eat, I don't eat.
His stomach growled audibly. He folded his arms across his chest. We stared at each other for 2 long minutes, both our stomachs rumbling as we inhaled the smell of the eggs. Every now and then he would peek down at the food out of the corner of his eye. That's what beat me, the longing look in his eyes.
Fine, I huffed.
I slid his bowl back to him and then retrieved my own. He waited until I took the first bite to touch his. I stifled a moan as the taste registered on my tongue. I knew the cooled, rubbery eggs weren't the best thing I'd ever tasted, but that's how it felt. This body lived for the present. Jamie had a similar reaction, and then he started shoveling the food into his mouth so fast it seemed he didn't have time to breathe. I watched him to make sure he didn't choke. I ate more slowly, hoping that I'd be able to convince him to eat some of mine when he was done. That was when, with our minor standoff over and my stomach satisfied, I finally noticed the atmosphere in the kitchen. I would have expected, with the excitement of eggs for breakfast after months of monotony, more of a feeling of celebration. But the air was somber, the conversations all whispered. Was this a reaction to the scene last night? I scanned the room, trying to understand. People were looking at me, a few here and there, but they weren't the only ones talking in serious whispers, and the others paid me no mind at all. Besides, none of them seemed angry or guilty or tense or any of the other emotions I was expecting. No, they were sad. Despair was etched on every face in the room. Sharon was the last person I noticed, eating in a distant corner, keeping to herself as usual. She was so composed as she mechanically ate her breakfast that at first I didn't notice the tears dripping in streaks down her face. They fell into her food, but she ate as if she were beyond noticing.
"Is something wrong with Doc?"
I whispered to Jamie, suddenly afraid. I wondered if I was being paranoid. Maybe this had nothing to do with me. The sadness in the room seemed to be part of some other human drama from which I'd been excluded. Was this what was keeping everyone busy? Had there been an accident? Jamie looked at Sharon and sighed before he answered me.
No, Doc's fine.
Aunt Maggie? Is she hurt?
He shook his head.
Where's Walter?
I demanded, still whispering. I felt annoying anxiety as I thought of harm befalling one of my companions here, even those who hated me.
I don't know. He's fine, I'm sure.
I realized now that Jamie was just as sad as everyone else here. What's wrong, Jamie? Why are you upset?
Jamie looked down at his eggs, eating them slowly and deliberately now, and did not answer me. He finished in silence. I tried to pass him what was left in my bowl, but he glowered so fiercely that I took it back and ate the rest without any more resistance. We added our bowls to the big plastic bin of dirty dishes. It was full, so I took it from the counter. I wasn't sure what was going on in the caves today, but dishes ought to be a safe occupation. Jamie came along beside me, his eyes alert. I didn't like that. I wouldn't allow him to act as my bodyguard, if the necessity arose. But then, as we made our way around the edge of the big field, my regular bodyguard found me, so it became a moot point. Ian was filthy. Light brown dust covered him from head to toe, darker where it was wet with his sweat. The brown streaks smeared across his face did not disguise the exhaustion there. I was not surprised to see that he was just as down as everyone else, but the dust did make me curious. It was not the purple-black dust inside the caves. Ian had been outside this morning.
"There you are," he murmured when he reached us.
He was walking swiftly, his long legs cutting the distance with anxious strides. When he reached us, he did not slow, but rather caught me under the elbow and hurried me forward.
"Let's duck in here for a minute."
He pulled me into the narrow tunnel mouth that led toward the eastern field, where the corn was almost ripe. He did not lead me far, just into the darkness where we were invisible from the big room. I felt Jamie's hand rest lightly on my other arm. After half a minute, deep voices echoed through the big cavern. They were not boisterous. They were somber, as depressed as any of the faces I'd read this morning. The voices passed us, close by the crack where we hid, and Ian's hand tensed on my elbow, his fingers pressing into the soft spots above the bone. I recognized Jared's voice, and Kyle's. Melanie strained against my control, and my control was tenuous anyway. We both wanted to see Jared's face. It was a good thing Ian held us back.
"Don't know why we let him keep trying. When it's over," Jared was saying. He really thought he had it this time. He was so sure. "Oh, well. It will be worth all this if he figures it out someday,"
Kyle disagreed.
"If," Jared snorted. "I guess it's a good thing we found that brandy. Doc's going to blow through the whole crate by nightfall at the rate he's going." "He'll pass out soon enough," Kyle said, his voice beginning to fade in the distance. "I wish Sharon would..."
And then I couldn't make out any more. Ian waited until the voices faded completely, and then a few minutes more, before he finally released my arm.
"Jared promised," Jamie muttered to him.
"Yeah, but Kyle didn't," Ian answered.
They walked back out into the light. I followed slowly behind them, not sure what I was feeling. Ian noticed for the first time what I carried.
"No dishes now," he told me. "Let's give them a chance to clean up and move on."
I thought about asking him why he was dirty, but probably like Jamie, he would refuse to answer. I turned to stare at the tunnel that led toward the rivers, speculating. Ian made an angry sound. I looked back at him, frightened, and then realized what had upset him. He'd only just seen my face. He raised his hand as if to lift my chin, but I flinched, and he dropped it.
"That makes me so sick," he said,
and his voice truly did sound as if he were nauseated.
"And worse, knowing that if I hadn't stayed behind, I might have been the one to do it."
I shook my head at him. "It's nothing, Ian."
"I don't agree with that," he muttered,
and then he spoke to Jamie.
"You probably ought to get to school. It's better that we get everything back to normal as soon as possible."
Jamie groaned.
"Sharon will be a nightmare today."
Ian grinned.
"Time to take one for the team, kid. I don't envy you."
Jamie sighed and kicked the dirt.
"Keep an eye on Wanda."
Will do.
Jamie shuffled away, casting glances back at us every few minutes until he disappeared into another tunnel.
Here, give me those, Ian said, pulling the bin of dishes from me before I could respond.
They weren't too heavy for me, I told him.
He grinned again. I feel silly standing here with my arms empty while you lug these around. Chalk it up to gallantry. Come on, let's go relax somewhere out of the way until the coast is clear.
His words troubled me, and I followed him in silence. Why should gallantry apply to me? He walked all the way to the cornfield and then into the cornfield, stepping in the low part of the furrow between the stalks. I trailed behind him until he stopped, somewhere in the middle of the field, set the dishes aside, and sprawled out on the dirt.
Well, this is out of the way, I said as I settled to the ground beside him, crossing my legs. But shouldn't we be working?
You work too hard, Wanda. You're the only one who never takes a day off.
It gives me something to do, I mumbled.
Everyone is taking a break today, so you might as well.
I looked at him curiously. The light from the mirrors threw double shadows through the corn stalks that crisscrossed over him like zebra stripes. Under the lines and the dirt, his pale face was weary.
You look like you've been working.
His eyes tightened.
But I'm resting now.
Jamie won't tell me what's going on, I murmured.
No, and neither will I.
He sighed.
It's nothing you want to know, anyway.
I stared at the ground, at the dark purple and brown dirt, as my stomach twisted and rolled. I could think of nothing worse than not knowing, but maybe I was just lacking in imagination.
It's not really fair, Ian said after a silent moment, seeing as I won't answer your question. But do you mind if I ask you one?
I welcomed the distraction. Go ahead. He didn't speak at once, so I looked up to find the reason for his hesitation. He was staring down now, looking at the dirt streaked across the backs of his hands.
I know you're not a liar. I know that now, he said quietly. I'll believe you, whatever your answer is.
I waited again while he continued to stare at the dirt on his skin.
I didn't buy Jeb's story before, but he and Doc are pretty convinced. Wanda? He asked, looking up at me. Is she still in there with you? The girl whose body you wear?
This was not just my secret anymore. Both Jamie and Jeb knew the truth. Neither was it the secret that really mattered. At any rate, I trusted Ian not to go blabbing to anyone who would kill me over it. Yes, I told him. Melanie is still here.
He nodded slowly. What is it like? For you? For her?
It's frustrating for us both. At first I would have given anything to have her disappear the way she should have. But now I've gotten used to her. I smiled wryly. Sometimes it's nice to have the company. It's harder for her. She's like a prisoner in many ways, locked away in my head. She prefers that captivity to disappearing, though.
I didn't know there was a choice.
There wasn't in the beginning. It wasn't until your kind discovered what was happening that any resistance started. That seems to be the key, knowing what's going to happen. The humans who were taken by surprise didn't fight back.
So, if I were caught?
I appraised his fierce expression, the fire in his brilliant eyes. I doubt you would disappear. Things have changed, though. When they catch full-grown humans now, they don't offer them as hosts. Too many problems. I half smiled again. Problems like me. Going soft. Getting sympathetic to my host. Losing my way. He thought about that for a long time. Sometimes looking at my face. Sometimes at the corn stalks. Sometimes at nothing at all.
What would they do with me, then, if they caught me now? He finally asked.
They'd still do an insertion, I think, trying to get information. Probably they'd put a seeker in you.
He shuddered.
But they wouldn't keep you as a host. Whether they found the information or not, you would be discarded. The word was hard to say. The idea sickened me. Odd. It was usually the human things that made me sick. But I'd never looked at things from the body's perspective before. No other planet had forced me to. A body that didn't function right was quickly and painlessly disposed of because it was as useless as a car that could not run. What was the point of keeping it around? There were conditions of the mind, too, that made a body unusable. Dangerous mental addictions, malevolent yearnings, things that could not be healed and made the body unsafe to others. Or, of course,